All right. Hi, everyone. So welcome to today's W3C CCG meeting. Today, we're very glad to actually have Kalia, Jamie, and Charles to present and lead a discussion on SB 786, or California Vital Records in Verifiable Credentials format. But before we get to the main agenda, we'll just do the regular admin stuff. So first of all, just a quick code of ethics and professional conduct reminder. Just make sure that everyone have a respectful conversation. You know, acknowledge and doesn't need to necessarily agree with each other's opinions and perspective, but at the very least acknowledge and respect their point of view. So I think we've been doing that great. But if you have any questions, just reach out to any of the co-chairs. A quick IP note, anyone can participate in these calls. However, all substantive contributions to the CCG work items must be member of the CCG with full IPR agreement signed. So the IPR agreements link are attached in every single email agenda that we send out. But if you have further questions, please reach out to any of the culture as well. All right, a quick call note. The meeting minutes and audio recordings will be published by the end of this week. Since this week is a little bit different, some of us cannot attend due to the VC working group face-to-face meeting, so we'll try to get the minutes and recordings out today. All right, we use GT chat to queue speakers during the call. So just type in Q+ to add yourself to the queue, or Q- to remove that, remove yourself on the queue. And you can do a Q? To see who's in the queue. All right. Just want to get to the introductions and reintroductions. If you're new to the community or you haven't been active for a little bit, and you want to reintroduce yourself, please feel free to just unmute. All right, any announcements or reminders? Kalia.
Hi. So in 2 weeks, we're hosting the APAC Digital Identity Unconference in Bangkok. If you are in the region or if you have colleagues in the region, please encourage them to come. We have a great set of folks registered, and we are now approaching the point where we might not have seats left. So if you're thinking about coming, please register. That's March 1-3. I'm working with another colleague on an event called the Thoughtful Biometrics Workshop to really talk about the intersection of biometrics, digital identity, their use in society, and you know, that's the subject that's coming up in this community around holder binding. And then one more event I'm working on with Johannes called the FETI Forum to really bring together people working in the Fediverse, and that's March. Those last two events are virtual, March 29th and 30th, and I'll put links to all those in the chat.
Sounds good. Thank you. Kalia.
This is trying to lower my hand, but you did it for me.
Okay. Sounds good. Any other announcements or reminders? So I have a quick one. Let me share my screen. So on March 2nd, Thursday, so I think that's next Thursday, we're going to have a special meeting on the giving feedbacks to NIST A00634 Digital Identity Guidelines. So I think this guidelines will go out to all the federal agencies, and they would like to get this community's feedback. So we're calling a special meeting, very similar to the last special meeting we have with the Canadian government, and this will happen on the March 2nd, Thursday. So I'll send out the meeting agenda later this week. But if you can attend, just please do. It's going to be on the Thursday, March 2nd, from 4 p.m. to 5 p.m. Eastern time. So that would be 1 p.m. and 2 p.m. Pacific time. And then if you want to see what's upcoming in the W3C agenda, you can just go to the W3.org. I'll send this link in the chat, and you can see all the upcoming meetings and agendas for the next 2 to 3 months. All right. Any other announcements or reminders or introductions and reintroductions? All right, any comments on the work items? No? All right. So at the end of the meeting, if we have some time, I'll reserve about 3 to 5 minutes for introductions, reintroductions, or announcements or reminders if people forgot to announce it right now. All right, let's get to the main agenda. So as mentioned, we're very, very pleased and very honored to have Kalia, Jamie, and Charles to actually present and lead a discussion on SB 786, California Vital Records and Verifiable Credentials Format. I think earlier, late last year, Kalia has sent out some announcements in an email in regards to the great work the team has done to push the, you know, California legislature to actually adopt the vital records in verifiable credentials format. So I think today they will share their stories and how they were able to actually help drive this achievement to drive further adoptions of verifiable credentials. So without further ado, Kalia, please take the floor.
Mm-hmm. Great. Thank you so much. So I'm going to start sharing my screen. And Charles, who's the head of the Blockchain Advocacy Coalition, the new executive director, will start off. And you can introduce yourself, obviously, Charles, when you start off. And maybe Jamie can also introduce herself before we get started. And then I'll share my screen and forward the slides, and hopefully it'll all work out. So can you?
Yes.
Oh, now wait, just 1 second. You can't. Just let me unshare. Why does it make it so hard? Okay, share there. Now it's got the screen. There's Jamie. Hi, Jamie. Good morning. Okay, the slides are working.
Yep, looks perfect.
And Charles, are you here?
I am here. Can you hear me okay?
Yes.
Great.
So do you want to start us off?
Sure. I will kick off and I'll just, like I say, next slide, I suppose. first of all, I want to thank everyone so much for giving us the opportunity to present. It's wonderful to be here. I know everyone's very busy, so I appreciate your time. And I just want to say thank you for that up front. I'm not going to take too long so that we can get to the substantive part of this presentation, because I know Kalia and Jamie have a lot to share. And for this community, I think there's a lot to talk about and we're very excited about. Briefly, a little bit about me, and I'll talk about the BAC. I'm an attorney. I live in San Francisco. I'm the executive director of the Blockchain Advocacy Coalition. I joined in November of last year. Before that, I worked as the COO of a layer one blockchain company in San Francisco. So I was knee deep on the networking, storage, and compute side. Before that, I led a nonprofit that worked at the intersection of technology and government. So I'm used to working in that space, working with government. And before that, I actually led an academic center. My research focused on open data, privacy, and open source work. So, let's move and talk about kind of today's topic, which is our entity, which is the Blockchain Advocacy Coalition. So the Blockchain Advocacy Coalition, and I apologize if you already know this, but just in case for those that may not, is the first and only membership-driven industry association We are committed to educating legislators and regulators about blockchain technology in the state of California. So that's specific to the state of California. There are other groups that work federal. We just work in California. So we advocate for, sponsor, and we organize efforts to promote blockchain, or so we'd like to say good blockchain policy. So that means we partner with blockchain policy experts and coalitions across the state and across the country to drive kind of a cohesive and effective message when it comes to the potential of Web3 and its applications. So that Web3, we mean that in the broadest possible terms. As a bit of an example, and I won't go into too much detail, we led efforts to pass the first two blockchain bills in California in 2018 and helped shape the state's blockchain policy through legislation and working with state regulatory agencies. Our activities include education, so that's like educating government officials, private industry, citizens, advocacy. So we're promoting good policies and trying to block or prohibit or prevent or work against, if you will, bad policy that hurts our members. But we do that by working with legislators and government officials and convening. So we create opportunities for government, private industry, and academia to meet and engage each other. We are organized around three working groups. Each working group focuses on a specific policy initiative that brings together California-specific values. And the three groups are the Verifiable Credentials Policy Committee, which I'm going to come back to, the Cryptocurrency Committee, and the work and the Blockchain for Public Good. Today, we're much more focused on the Verifiable Credentials Policy Committee. The big focus for us within this committee and going forward this year is managing and trust frameworks. It's a pretty big project, frankly, when we think about trust frameworks. I mean, everyone here is probably more familiar with it than I am, to be honest. But we're trying to look to drill down on areas that that we can kind of start to make inroads with and build, if you will, trust with government officials. One of the big issues that we have learned is a gap between government officials and private industries, a knowledge gap. And so we're trying to help fill that by building out use cases that they can, the government officials rather, can kind of hold on to. They can see the powerful impact and the benefits, whether it's providing government services or improving government services or just society overall, but something they can really latch on to. But the good thing is that the key word here is education. People are really open to it, even after all the kind of volatility of last year. As part of that, we are building a community of experts in the space that want to shape policy in California, because where goes California, so goes the world. California oftentimes is the policy influencer that shapes the rest of the country with cars, climate, and privacy. So the Verifiable Credentials Policy Committee more specifically promotes the benefits of Web3 technology to contribute to the public good and bring wider public adoption. We do this by promoting education and policy. Right now, we're looking at portable identity and trust frameworks. Members of this committee include companies that are working on or companies that are working with products related to portable identity and trust governance frameworks. There are a variety of examples. I'm not going to talk about them too much. I'll let Kalia and Jamie talk about them. But there are a variety of different areas that we're seeing this emerge and that we're very excited about. And to conclude, I will say this is a great opportunity for those that might be interested in this, that want to work directly with legislators, government officials, kind of really in the meat or in the engine, if you will, of getting these policies and regulations out there and shaping the conversation. We are seeing a lot of excitement, or I should say interest, maybe is a good word, interest from government officials and non-Web3 entities in trying to explore how we can develop these tools, and we are very excited about that. So, with that, I will close and pass it to, I think, is it Kalia?
Thanks, Charles. I'd love to have Jamie introduce herself before we dive into sort of storytelling about how we got to now. So, Jamie.
Sure. Yeah, thanks for having us, Kalia. Jamie Miner. I work for a lobbying firm up here in Sacramento, Nemora Pappas and Associates, but I've been the main lobbyist for the Blockchain Advocacy Coalition since its inception. So I have a background in mostly policy, working for elected officials, working for the speaker in the House of Representatives, and now I've been lobbying for about 9 years here in Sacramento, representing a number of different clients and entities that have really created a niche in specifically tech policy, privacy, consumer protection, financial technology, and blockchain. So yeah, that's a little bit about me, and then happy to dive into more of the history of BAC too.
Cool. Thanks. Thanks, Jamie. So now we'll get into storytelling. So in the work really started in 2018 when California passed AB 2658 to establish the blockchain technology working group. And it was chartered with evaluating blockchain use cases, risks, benefits, legal implications, and best practices, along with defining the term blockchain and recommending amendments to other statutes that may be impacted by the blockchain. And I was not down for this. Jamie was a key instrumental part of making this happen. So maybe you can share what was interesting to legislators about this approach and this establishment of this working group, Jamie.
Sorry, the impetus of the working group, it really was, you know, just for government to convene, to come together, you know, a group of academics, a group of regulators, you know, some legislators to dive into some, you know, core policy principles that the community could agree upon, and then as well as a number of different use cases. And building off those use cases, you know, using blockchain technology, what regulations, consumer protections, you know, government should consider when thinking about them or looking at them. So it was appointed, this working group was appointed by the governor, and you can see, you know, Clea has up on here the attendees. You know, we had a lot of our membership participate, a lot of our partners in academia participated, and it ended in about a 200-page document, again, looking at a number of use cases that we've kind of used as a roadmap ever since to build credibility on legislative proposals that we have pursued. So, yeah, it's a great document, and I think, you know, other states have since followed suit trying to do their own blockchain working group, but really California was the first.
Great. And you can see on here that Brian Ellendorf, who used to be the executive director of Hyperledger, was on this committee. And you can also see the one for the senators, Senator Hirschberg, and people from his office were active participants. And he will come up later in the story. I'm going to post a link to the report so folks can find it if they like. So this really laid the foundation for the work that would come up next. So then the pandemic arrived and we had basically my understanding from Allie was that when the pandemic arrived, basically all sort of regular legislating sort of ceased and everybody was focused on how to address the pandemic. And the idea for this came from Tony Rose, who was working on verifiable credentials technology around basically using verifiable credentials to prove health status. Early on in the pandemic, it was potentially about like testing results. So you could reopen movie sets and stuff. And so people who had two different jobs that both required testing could like get tested once and share those results across different places. So Jamie, can you share kind of the journey of this bill and what happened to it?
Yeah. As I mentioned, you know, the working group, outlined a number of different use cases. And really, in order to bring awareness to legislators and help them wrap their minds around the technology, this is the best way to frame it. And so we kind of leaned into the curve of the messaging that we were getting from legislators that if they were going to do any bills, it had to be to obviously address the pandemic and the concerns that came about from the pandemic. So that's, you know, why we pursued this verifiable credential for COVID, not vaccine, a testing requirement. This was pre-vaccine. And it was an effective solution that really, we were able to highlight some of the privacy enhancing characteristics of using verifiable credentials. We got great traction in the legislature. It passed unanimously. Where we ran up into a roadblock was the Department of Public Health. I think they were terrified to implement. They didn't think they had the tools. They thought they were going to have to create a whole new working group to come up with, you know, some sort of framework that would identify the rules of the road for which, when they use this verifiable credential technology, even though we viewed it as just, permissive in nature, they viewed it as something that they were mandated to do. And because of the cost impacts, and at that point they were concerned about a $55 billion deficit in the state of California, the bill was ultimately vetoed by the governor. However, he did say in his veto message that, he's instructing the Department of Public Health and other state agencies to look at all sorts of technology. So that, kind of a blanket veto message that we see across the board when he does take that action. We were disappointed, but, it got the use case out there and it started to build on the education we've already done, again, on what a tangible use case can look like.
What's important too is that it passed both houses, so that that awareness was in the legislative body. And here's Assemblymember Calderon speaking to it on the House floor. So then we got to SB 1190, and so this is around the time that I joined working with Ali Medina, who was leading the coalition at the time. And we were talking, brainstorming what potential ideas for legislation would make sense for us to put forward. And I said, why don't we, this is literally my idea talking now, why don't we do a trust framework for the state of California? And we worked on this in 2021 and it became like a 2-year bill. The legislative cycle in California is sort of like 1 or 2 years. And this bill would require the Department of Technology to create a California trust framework to provide industry standards and best practice regulating the issuance of verifiable credentials to verify information about a person or legal entity. The bill would require the California Trust Framework to be designed to the greatest extent possible to be interoperable with other government trust and governance frameworks for verifiable credentials. So we had success in that it made it through the Senate, but then it got suspended in appropriations. So can you share more about what that process was like and what that means, Jamie?
Yeah, it's our favorite committee. Just 101, how a bill becomes a law, since I'm sure it's been a minute since your civics class. It starts in a policy committee after it's introduced, where it's voted upon. Then it goes to a fiscal committee where all bills are viewed, because, when you have 4,000 bills introduced each session, they kind of have to look at it in totality to see, okay, well, this is going to cost, if we pass all these bills, it'll cost the state $50 billion. And so they have to do that in parallel with the state budget process. So it's everybody's favorite committee. When it gets there, kind of behind closed doors, the Senate and Assembly leadership take a look at all these bills. They say, okay, well, this legislator has 10 bills. It seems like XYZ are their priorities or fit in with what our caucus priorities are. We have to kind of trim the fat, and these ones will be sacrificed and will not make it out this year just because of, limited resources. So unfortunately, we are not quite sure what the conversation was behind closed doors, but it ultimately ended up in this bill being held in Appropriations Committee on fiscal grounds, so that it just, they weren't willing to put the resources into, again, creating another working group to come up with this trust framework, because it would require pretty significant state resources, having to appoint the group, having to convene, staff to facilitate it, to do documentation, to do reports to the legislature. So it did get held under those grounds. So we have to kind of rethink our approach when we want to pursue it again.
So just briefly, I sent this video around yesterday, but we did figure out how to share it. So I'm going to play a tiny little clip of Senator Hertzberg on.
Can I tell you something? I've been working on this. You can. I've been working on blockchain since I got here. And I've been thinking about how to talk about blockchain, and I wanted to stand on this floor of the Senate, although we're in committee now, and talk about blockchain, because when I started working on it, most people thought it was the fence around a swimming pool and didn't really understand the sophistication and what it was and how it worked. And so I introduced a bill some years ago that was passed this House and signed by the governor that dealt with getting inventory of various local governments to begin to frame that out. And then I also did a blockchain bill basically that talked about corporations that could then put their stock certificates on the blockchain to present against fraud in partnership with then Majority Leader Ian Calderon, who did a basic study group, a working group that both Assemblymember Calderon, Mr. Allen, and I were involved in, and we put together the greatest experts around the state and met at Berkeley a number of times, and they made a number of recommendations about what we should do with respect to moving the discussion in government forward on blockchain. And we're not the first, surprising to say, with respect to adopting blockchain technology. Wyoming, the great state of Wyoming that's smaller than Senator Archuleta's district, currently permits the use of blockchain in state government, authorizes the Secretary of State to implement blockchain-based commercial filings. Colorado, which is probably the size of a couple of Senate districts here, passed legislation to explore the use of blockchain to securely transfer records between state agencies and protect confidential data. The private sector, department stores are using blockchains now to create shared ledgers and increase transparency between merchants, shippers, and purchasers to eliminate invoice disputes. And some grocery providers, coffee manufacturers, and others using blockchains to deploy food traceability systems to increase product tracing and the cause of foodborne illnesses and contamination. So it's the issue starting to catch on pretty significantly. The opportunities are pretty extraordinary, as I say, was suggested by the 2018 blockchain working group that Majority Leader Calderon and I were part of. And so what are we doing here today in moving this debate forward? This is aimed at one of the recommendations coming from the blockchain working group, and it deals with verified credentials. Verifiable credentials are part of our daily life. Think, for example, of a driver's license we use to assert that we can drive a car, passports that enable us to travel between countries, high school transcripts that are used to prove our educational level coming out of high school. Verifying these credentials, members, is often a time-consuming, paper-based process. Without adequate security, electronic credentials are seen as too easily forged and unreliable. Blockchain-based credentials can help remove friction that enables securing showing of online credentials verified for proof under the individual's control. So this measure does two things. One, it creates the California Trust Framework to ensure the use of verifiable credentials to a standard recognized by both the public and private sector. It takes us down the road, the next step. It is time that California engages in this, and then it also allows for the ability, and particularly I like this because it's about high school students, where they can use the blockchain to verify their high school records.
Okay, that's enough. If you want to watch it, the finished part, you can. We've got our friend Judith Sleener, who's now the executive director of TrustRAP, testifying, as well as Tony Rose. So it's fun to see. I'll share my screen again, and we'll keep storytelling. We're almost done. And then the exciting part, we had success. Yay. We worked. Can you tell us, Jamie, about the county assessors and how this was success, you know, what was compelling about this for other folks coming with us and worked on it?
Yeah, the best, the best part of this is working with other, associations, stakeholders, that want to use this use case because they think it's going to, bring their technology and their practices to the 21st century. So we partnered with the California County Assessors Association, which think about your local, office that issues your marriage licenses or death records. There were a few different counties that are, in beta or have already worked with blockchain companies to for storage purposes, for document storage purposes. Right now, they have to kind of keep them in a dark basement, sealed in a specific way. So specifically Placer County, which represents parts of Lake Tahoe, it's in Northern California. They have a really cool pilot program working on issuing these vital records using blockchain technology. So they were our co-sponsor in this effort. We ended up being able to pass it unanimously in both houses, and it was signed by the governor. And now we're kind of working with the county assessors on implementation, you know, answering questions that they might have. They are interested in using this verifiable credential technology. And yeah, it was exciting to see, you know, the embracing of this use case and again, making it something that's understandable and relatable to legislators, where otherwise, you know, they have a pretty steep learning curve.
Yeah. And I think one of the other things too is that because my understanding about how some of these processes work, because we tried for an ambitious bill like the trust framework that got suspended in appropriations, this bill was sort of like a way to do something that was slightly less ambitious. And so that's how these things kind of go. It's like you try for something big and you have a fallback to something that can have success. And this is, I just outlined sort of like the before. There's a lot of very specific requirements for the paper that these certificates were printed on, and there was no alternative. And during the pandemic, apparently some counties actually ran out of the special paper. And so this bill actually met a particular real world need, which is having some backup to paper that people receive credentials that they need for all sorts of different parts of their life. And then this is the language after is the language that got included around verifiable credentials. And then, in December 2022, this is actually linked on the same page as the blockchain working group. The governor published this, outlining responsible innovation in relationship to his executive order. So maybe Jamie, you can also share about how this connected to the trust framework sort of being suspended and the governor's work sort of bringing forward some of what we've been talking about.
Yeah, so, you know, Governor Newsom has always had really close ties with Silicon Valley, with the technology industry, for obvious reasons. You know, he hails from San Francisco. He's done a number of things on technology, specifically around procurement of state agencies using, you know, cutting edge technologies, just so we don't have another technology fiasco like we saw with, you know, our Department of Motor Vehicles, like the employee EDD, you know, checks coming out or going out to, you know, fraudulent or fraudsters. So after a number of high profile tech fiascos, the governor signed this executive order. This was Terra Luna and, you know, the crypto winter that we're seeing now by about a month before. But it really leaned in on wanting government to look into these technologies, to look at where there are efficiencies and use cases, to adopt standards and principles that will promote them, specifically on the cryptocurrency front. And then also included in there was a request for innovation. So looking at private sector to, you know, come up with their good ideas again on use cases for government. They like to use this DMV use case. Obviously they're moving forward with the digital ID that I'm sure many of you have heard about. We have weighed in a little bit about some concerns we have there, just on how it was being operated. And I know Kalia has a lot of thoughts and lots to share on that. But it's really, you know, cutting edge and kind of first of its kind, at least that's what the governor likes to say, in the country. And so from here, he issued a report, again, looking at the opportunities, looking at the challenges, and looking at the risks of Web3 technology. And it's a long, long report that's, you know, maybe worth a gander. But I know Kalia, you know, pulled out some specific provisions too. But it's kind of building upon the blockchain working group report that we saw come out in 2019 after the working group convened. So a great opportunity to have a governor that embraces the technology, that sees its value, that wants government to use it. So, you know, that kind of plays into, you know, why we saw the success that we did in SB 786, the vital records bill. And also he vetoed a key bill that would have had a big impact on the crypto industry, AB 2269, which we won't get into, but he's kind of seen as this savior for the Web3 community.
Thanks. And so now I'm going to turn it back to Charles to talk about where the Blockchain Advocacy Coalition, specifically the Verifiable Credentials Policy Committee, is going this year.
Great. Thank you. Thank you for everyone. Thank you everyone for listening and engaging with us on this. I'll keep this short, but one thing I want to point out during this conversation, when Kalia talked about SB 786, it illustrates really well, I'll say, the growing demand for thinking around verifiable credentials and the applications and uses in California. And we anticipate that's only going to keep growing. How and where those areas will evolve is still TBD, frankly. We're still driving that. We're still working with government officials on that. And that's why we organized the Verifiable Credentials Policy Committee, so that we can provide an entity for members to consistently engage with, government officials to provide kind of a clearly defined touch point for government officials to come to and speak to, because they're looking for it, as the video kind of touched upon, and to generate materials and events that inform the narrative to promote good policies around verifiable credentials. So to that end, we are currently reaching out to those that want to see advancement in this space and want to work with others and to join us. Joining now does allow members to shape the direction of the Blockchain Advocacy Coalition that we will take when we're engaging with elected officials, the staff and regulators, because there's multiple parties there. And I say all that because we're a membership-based organization. We have multiple levels for individuals to large companies, because we appreciate their different resources, but we are a membership-based structure. Our direction is driven by the members, not just by me or Jamie or Kalia. And if you are interested in learning more, we'd love to have you. I'm also happy to just set up a time to answer questions that anyone on this call might have for me. But we are looking for members to join. The sooner the better. Not just because it means that we can move faster, but it also means that the early members get to kind of shape and direct a little bit more how those conversations are going to go. I'll conclude with just touching on the slide in terms of the three things, activities that we are working on, policy. Oh, no, go back, please. Policy, convening. Kalia, can you go back one slide, please? There you go, thanks. Policy, convening, and public. So from the policy standpoint, we are working on putting together direct policies. Convening, we will be bringing together government officials and industry members in roundtables. These are often invite only, so they're private. And in public, we are launching education initiative that will be more public facing, so that we'll have opportunities to work with the public overall. So with that, I think I will close. Thank you, Kalia.
We have one more aside, which is sort of like why California. I think given the global context of this group is important, so you can touch upon that. Yeah.
I'll touch upon it. I mean, I mentioned it earlier in the very beginning, which is, you know, why California? I mean, California's policy and legislation and rules have impacted climate control. They've impacted cars. They've impacted privacy policies. This state, the judicial system, is the most influential Supreme Court in the United States. It's even cited by countries outside, courts outside the United States. And on top of that, of course, I mean, really it's driven by the economy and the population size. So from a federal level, yes, California has 120 members, but, you know, really from a state standpoint, from the laboratories of democracy, what we find is that California has this greater influence. Government officials know this. The governor knows this. The governor's strike, you know, looking at running for president kind of thing. There's this outsized influence. And so when we talk about participating or joining California, number one, we're talking about having that outsized influence across the rest of the country, because we anticipate that the other states, especially states in the West Coast, will follow suit. The second piece to that is that California has a little bit more of a diverse economy in blockchain or Web3, I should say, versus other states. So other states tend to be very focused, say, on mining or very, very focused on fintech. California has mining to some extent, but really fintech and technology builders. And that ends up having a greater influence even on industry standards. So we are coordinating with state actors. We are coordinating with federal actors. We have a lot of engagement going on with officials inside California, and we anticipate that to keep going forward and the impact of that to be, frankly, national.
And one other caveat I would just plug, we also have an opportunity here in California to work with privacy and consumer protection groups. You know, they have kind of an outsized presence in our legislature. When you think about a three-quarters Democratic legislature, you know, they really lean in on consumer protection. So in order to be successful, we need to lean in and build strong partnerships and allegiances with those groups. So, you know, Kalia can attest to, we've spent a lot of time working with the ACLU, with EFF, Consumer Federation. Actually, we reached out this week and wants to partner on a title insurance bill and using blockchain technology in this space to save consumers money when it comes to title insurance. So a lot of good opportunities, and then that can kind of, you know, as these issues bubble up nationally, a lot of the good work that we're doing with these local chapters in California, you know, prove beneficial in those more national debates and can serve as kind of a boilerplate. So I'll just share that, you know, especially if you're looking at, you know, building out use cases or wanting to partner with local governments on specific technologies. You know, we'd love folks to get involved as we work on this potential title insurance bill this year with the consumer feds.
Thanks, Jamie. So there's just two last slides. So like, Charles said, the Blockchain Advocacy Coalition and the committee underneath it, the Verifiable Credentials Policy Committee, we're a membership-based organization. So there are membership packages available for participation. And I just, put up one of the membership levels, the community member. But if you want more information about all the other levels and what's involved, and we invite you to connect with Charles and learn more, because we love participation. And participation is actually welcome from all over the world. One of the major contributors to the coalition the last 2 years was Matter from New Zealand. So it's not like we're our work is focused in California and our membership is global at the same time. So with that, we'll stop sharing and turn it over to the community to ask us questions about our work, where we're going, and yeah.
So I will ask the first question. So I'm wondering, like, what are the business opportunities once this bill is passed? And also, like, how, and this is a tougher question, how does the most recent crypto winter going to affect the adoptions of these new technologies?
I'm happy to take a step first, but Clea and Charles, you know, feel free or maybe I'll take your first question, which is, what are the business opportunities? And the business opportunities most obvious are, you know, with the state. As more local governments and, you know, more governments pursue these technologies, they will, you know, they'll look to the private sector to implement. We've already seen that with the implementation of SB 786 as different, you know, county and clerk quarters turn to the blockchain and need to, you know, partner with blockchain companies to make that happen and get off the ground. But secondly, you know, really one of our biggest goals is to make sure government, you know, doesn't detract from what we're trying to do. That they aren't, you know, saying that this technology, doesn't benefit consumers, that there are, you know, things that are of concern to them, whether it's energy use or whether it's, you know, just all the news articles you've been seeing now, especially in light of kind of what's happening with centralized exchanges. We have to go in there and make sure in government's eyes, you know, they don't, box out a specific technology just because of a news headline that they don't quite understand. So that's a huge part of our job, and it's really, really important that legislators, you know, hear that no, blockchain technology is beyond cryptocurrency. That's a big part of it. There's a lot of money in it. You know, there's a lot of value in that, but there are other, you know, good things that can come from it. And that's what Charles kind of alluded to at the beginning. We have a separate working group that's called the Blockchain for Public Good. And it's really focusing on, again, those use cases that can benefit communities, that they can take back to their constituents and say, no, this will provide efficiencies for government. When we look at some of the biggest failures of our state when it comes to technology, it's been on the identity side. There's a ton of opportunity here for government to embrace, you know, a new technology that can protect identities, that, you know, people have more control. So that's, you know, it's kind of twofold. It's making sure that there is an actual practical, you know, tangible business opportunity, but also that government understands and doesn't get in the way. And if anything, it goes a step further and promotes it. And then, you know, hoping that that kind of snowballs across the country.
Thank you, Jamie. Ellen, I think you're in the queue. Yeah,
so my understanding is that you don't need blockchain for verifiable credentials, but all this work seems to tie them very closely together. Is that necessary? Is that political? Is, you know, sometimes there's privacy implications with putting credentials on the chain.
Yeah, so I think that it was interesting trying to work to get the term verifiable credentials into the bill, because originally it was just about the blockchain. I think the way it's worded is doesn't require its use. A lot of and the part of what I did working with Jamie as the AB or SB 786 was going through the assembly was to make sure that the diagrams describing how the technology worked were accurate, that were being shared with legislative offices. So we, the way we drew this was to really not have credentials, and credentials themselves were not on chain. They were just using decentralized identifiers that potentially were on chain or just in like the DIDNEB format, right? So it was sort of political to have the term blockchain there because of the prior work that we articulated.
Yeah, just the word du jour for legislators. You know, they look for these buzzwords to make a press headline. So they were really fixated on including blockchain. So that was mostly a call on their end when it comes to our verifiable credential bill. They, you know, it was this new sexy term that they felt got them notoriety with a specific community that, you know, they were cutting edge. So, kind of just how politicians work.
All right, Anil, I think you're next in the queue.
Yes, I'm going to stay away from the politics of blockchain and the politics of government not getting in the way, since I do work for the government. But what I wanted to sort of understand is, I fully understand the value of policy, but I also know the reality of unfunded mandates. So I'm curious to understand, great, you got policy through, you have, as something that can happen, but that doesn't mean that anybody is actually going to do anything with it unless there is funding put behind making something happen. I'm curious to understand what, if any, work is going on in sort of ensuring that now that you've opened the door with the policy, somebody actually walks through it.
Sorry, can you repeat your question? It was on unfunded mandates.
Sure. Let me make it a little bit simpler, right? So you got a policy through that basically says that, you know, this technology can be used for a variety of things. But government agencies, just because there is a policy, does not mean that they will actually use the technology. They basically will consider that, okay, that's interesting. That gives us options. But, you know, you're not funding us, or we don't have the budget or anything like that to go down there. So we call them unfunded mandates, which is when magical stuff gets handed to us as things to do, but you don't put funding behind it in order to actually make things happen. So I'm kind of curious to understand, now that you've opened the policy door around this, what if any work is actually going into, for example, ensuring that in a variety of agencies within California itself, for example, are actually funded as part of their budget in order to actually do something with this?
Yeah, well, right now in California, you know, unfortunately, we're seeing a $22 billion deficit at a minimum. So, you know, we are really rethinking our approach on when we get aggressive. You know, it's part of the reason we, as you heard in the introduction of SB 1190 by Senator Hertzberg, initially our bill had a pilot program, which required the Department of Education to look at the use case of community college transcripts and credentials for our, you know, via verifiable credential technology. We ended up striking that from the bill just because of the unfunded mandate concern, and have since pivoted to a more permissive route, which is, you know, just allowing government to utilize it. You know, I think what we saw in Placer County and other counties that are embracing of this technology and are looking at it, they see, you know, government savings and efficiencies too. So, you know, we just have to make sure that we, once these bills are implemented, that we work with these local governments to bring forward, you know, how these technologies can save money at the end of the day. When you look at the amount of fraud that exists, the numbers of $40 billion to our Department of Development Services, EDD, when, you know, all those COVID benefits went out to folks that were unemployed, you know, a few obstacles or new technologies or efficiencies that we can bring forward using verifiable credential technologies could save, you know, a lot more money down the road. So that we're really having to reframe it that way. And instead of saying, sure, you know, there will be some upfront costs in moving to this technology down the road, you'll see a lot of cost savings, and just kind of reframe the narrative.
Understood. I appreciate your answer. I'll also note that I think the saving grace here is, I think, of all people, the California DMV. They just launched some capabilities on top of the Tezos blockchain. And I think, you know, Ajay Gupta and the team, who are the, you know, digital innovation folks there, are really, you know, thoughtful and thinking broadly about how to enable technology. So I think you do have some folks who are sort of are not limited in their imagination, and that is a good thing. So thank you for your answer.
Thanks for the question.
Thank you. And Damari, I think you're next in the queue.
Yeah, thanks everyone for your presentation. My name's Damari, and I am the Director of Community Engagement at the Decentralized Identity Foundation. And I was at the last Internet Identity Workshop, and somebody called a session with a provocative title, which was Blockchain is Poison for the SSI Brand. And it was a fun discussion of just, and it was at in the aftermath of FTX and sort of the association of blockchain, it becomes a buzzword for something negative. So it was interesting to hear what you were describing about some of the legislators actually wanting to have the association of the term, but it almost seems like it kind of it swings between good and bad. Bad press, it goes down. Good press, you know, people want to be associated with it. And I guess in the aftermath of the FTX situation, I'm curious if that changed in your lobbying in the legislative work, or if it's just this sort of issue comes up a lot in the work you're doing.
I don't know if it changed our lobbying. It really made us rethink the basic understanding and knowledge of, you know, what the legislature and their staff has to work with. So we are launching an education series specifically focused on, okay, we're taking a step back from the financial use cases and, you know, just focusing on what a distributed ledger technology can provide, what it can promote, what are some of the key principles. And then from there, you know, pivoting to this, you know, relaunch of the Blockchain for Public Good committee that we have, you know, alongside the Verifiable Credential Committee, you know, again, to reshape the narrative on the positive use cases. So we're kind of doing two things. One is just a basic education, because folks are just mixing up the two in a way that, you know, they don't understand. You know, in a world where you have 4,000 bills introduced every session, there really is limited time for staff and legislators to dive into the policy, unfortunately. So we have to lean into that and provide just snippets and, you know, headlines and 1 hour blocks of information that can be really digestible. So we're doing that. And then we're also, you know, focused on, again, this Blockchain for Public Good, where we can kind of catalog some of these use cases. There, we're working with some nonprofits in Oakland, for example, with City3. They have a community token that they're working on. And so just showing that there are use cases that match the values that Californians have. And then also, you know, partnering with the Consumer Federation that has a lot of credibility in the consumer protection, you know, space, and with a lot of, you know, more progressive legislators, and leaning into those partnerships so that, you know, we're not starting from scratch. They too, share the same mission of, you know, privacy enhancing technologies that protect consumers and give consumers more power. So building those, you know, partnerships and opportunities to collaborate so that, again, we're not just, out there alone trying to educate a whole group of folks. We have folks by our side that already have that built-in credibility too.
Cool. Thank you. Thank you, Jamie. And thank you, Jamie, again, and Kalia and Charles for a great presentation today. I think this is quite a bit of a different topic. Usually we talk about technical stuff quite a bit. So this is actually a quite interesting topic to discuss. So thank you for taking the time to present at W3C CCG today. All right. So I think we're at time. So we'll try to get the recording out ASAP today. And, if you are curious about the upcoming meetings, please, go to the W3C, CCG calendar. All right. Thank you. Have a good one. Bye.
Thank you, everyone.
Thanks.